Time for the pick of the week. Brought to you by Riverfront Auto Sales. Riverfront Auto Sales pick of the week is a sleek black 2017 Honda CR-V, packed with modern tech, roomy cargo space, the ultimate all-wheel drive crossover, safe, fuel efficient, sharp looking. You can test drive today and go to Riverfront Auto Sales, 1379 Niagara Street, or online, riverfrontautosales.com. Patrick Kane to Chicago, two-year deal, $8 million per year. I think Friedman says that, meaning the cap hit. Kane was eligible for a 35-year-old plus contract, which is different than other contracts. Right. Hockey is not like football, where while Josh Allen makes $55 million per year, but his cap hit this year is $37
million. Right.
That doesn't happen in hockey, unless you're 35 years old and they can start playing around with incentives where, like, Evgeny Malkin is the example from this offseason. He signed a one-year, if you go to Puckpedia right now, you'll see that Malkin signed a deal, one-year, $5.5 million. That's the cap hit. The AAV actually on Puckpedia says $9 million because there is incentives in the deal that he can earn that don't go against the cap. And that you can't do that with other contracts. So Malkin, for instance, he gets $250,000 for playing 42 games, $250,000 for getting 63 games. He gets another $1 million if they make the playoffs, and then he gets $500,000 for each playoff round win. That's how he could make up to $9
million. Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, isn't it likely, given the Sabres have not a ton of cap space?
They got like 8.1 right now, I think.
No, they have 5.1. 5.1 million in space. I mean, weren't the Sabres offering $3 to $4 million less, but they were telling Kane, like, well, we can probably pack you the deal with this and this.
And yeah, score over 50 points and you get another mill, another, you know, same as what you were saying with Malkin. Yeah, I think a lot of teams do that, but I think it's likely that Chicago was ready and able to offer a bigger guaranteed number. And at Kane's age and his sort of desire to really, it seems like these are the only two places he was going to play, he just picked the offer that guaranteed him a little more money. I would expect he's just as comfortable in Chicago as he is in Buffalo, if not more. He spent his whole career there.
Like, it could have been a money thing. The money's guaranteed in Chicago. It probably isn't guaranteed unless they were going to get rid of somebody.
Right.
It wasn't going to be guaranteed here in the same way. So 37 years old, he'll be 38 at the beginning of the season. These are his age 38 and 39-year-old years. He's probably going his entire career without playing in Buffalo. And I find that more Sabre fans, more Buffalo hockey fans, it's not weird because we know the history and we know the allegations against Kane from, is that a decade ago now?
Yeah.
Or right around?
Maybe even more.
Yeah, his history with the community is not positive.
No.
But because I feel like the hockey world doesn't sense that. Like, everybody's like, oh, what a story be. Like, Patrick Kane going home. And the Sabres have clearly wanted him. Like, multiple times. They've wanted him to some degree. He's going to go his whole career without playing in Buffalo. And I feel like the majority of fans think that is a good thing. They would rather, and again, like, kind of crazy, right? Because the most decorated American hockey player ever,
an icon,
is from Buffalo.
Yeah.
And we're all like, good. Don't want him ever playing here.
I'm out.
I put a poll up just to like gauge, like, I wonder how much it is. And it's only been up for a couple minutes. Already 100 votes. 73% are like, good, I'm glad he's never playing here, versus disappointed and sad.
Yeah, I think, you know, people from here know that he's got stuff. And, you know, it's reported that he's worked on it and he's you know, done a lot to try to improve in that way. And, you know, good on him if he has. We don't know that, obviously. And all we can judge is what we know. And what we know is that he's done some pretty horrible things in the past. And so I think there's probably people here that are, I think, maybe a little bit like you and me, not exactly upset that he won't be back to town. Professionally, at least. And so, you know, you could have wanted the hockey player. I didn't even really want the hockey player. if we're being honest. So there's really nothing I'm upset to be missing out on here.
Yeah.
Personally, I respect it. And like I said, he is an icon. I mean, that is growing up at my age, whether you're from Buffalo or not, Patty Kane was the guy. Like, he was the coolest. He had all the celebrations. He had the hands, the shootout goals, the cups, and he was the man. And so I think the fact that people here, at least some, myself included, feel okay about him not coming back and not completely torn up and like, why didn't you choose us? Oh my God, this sucks. Like, there's no part of me that's like, well, the Sabres thing is all back. Like, oh, nobody wants to play here, blah, blah, blah. Like, even Patty Kane won't come play here. There's 0% of me that thinks that way. And I think there's a lot of people out there like me that, even though they acknowledge how amazing he was and really is still in many ways, there's other things to be considered that could, you know, push you in a different direction.
Yeah. Yeah. I said this a little bit earlier. My disappointment, and it's not that much disappointment because I don't think the Sabres should have given him that contract. I went into the offseason wanting them to get a power play guy and to get one that could be the elite passer, the distributor, the zone entry guy. I don't care that Kane was from Buffalo at all. I think he was that player and was the best one left on the market that fits that description. And right now, like, to turn to the hockey side of things, okay, so no Kane. The power play is going to be is going to have to be fixed internally.
Mm-hmm.
There's no one else. Mantha was a power play guy, but he's more of a shooter. He didn't really fit that anyway. And he actually didn't cost as much as I thought. $4.5 million
right.
He went for.
That's crazy. That's that crazy Mantha deal. Makes $4.5 million. Kane gets $8 million.
Right.
That's psychotic.
That is insane. So they're not, I don't think they are addressing power play externally.
No.
Before the season. So how do they go from the 20th power play that looked like the 30th power play that went a month without scoring a power play goal to what can I shoot for? What can I aspire for?
You should aspire to be a top
10?
10 unit in the league.
How
do I
do
that? With the team that they have?
They've not been that.
How do you do
in
that?
four years.
Well, okay.
Is Kulik how I do it?
Kulik could
By the way, I'm not saying like they can't do it.
No,
I think they could.
It's a good question. I think it's a valid question that we've, you know, it is a challenge clearly for us and them to figure out. How do you do it? Your entries need to be better, and that's not something that these players should struggle with skill-wise.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can fix that, you fix a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
And so entries is a coachable, fixable thing. Full blank, like full stop.
Yeah.
I'm not giving anybody any excuse to like, well, I don't think Rasmus Dahlin can execute a power play zone entry. That is not what's happening here. They just frankly don't have a very good one right now. Or they use it so often that teams know how to stop it and they don't know how to adjust.
Right.
So, okay, fix that problem. What do you got to do there? You have to be okay dumping the puck in the first couple times you touch it, maybe. Or understanding that the strength on your power play may be that you've got two guys up front in Josh Doan and Zach Benson that can just go get it back. So, like, maybe that's just your entry, is to go outman the puck. I've done that to great success. I mean, I know it. Nichols is a very different thing, but like, I did that with guys that could have done something else, and it works because if you get your guys to just work harder, you will get the puck.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a very easy place that doable, as in a coach can come in and just do that and fix it, and it's good.
Mm-hmm.
So that's great. I think Kulik is big because he's a shot threat that is significant.
Mm-hmm.
And then
opposite of Tage,
exactly. Sorry, I meant to mention that is very important for this. And then I think you can hope that Helenius is a power play guy somewhere. Bumper, maybe that would make sense for me.
Yep.
Put him in the middle there, and then a continued development of Benson and Doan, and like. That's a very good power play waiting to happen. You've got two great low guys with crazy good vision, great hands. Doan's awesome on the goal line. We saw him score like 3 between the legs goals this year.
Mm-hmm.
He's awesome at that. Thompson is an all-world elite shooter. Dahlin is a Norris finalist defenseman.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Kulik, who will be a great shooter over there if he's doing the job, and has shown a good playmaking ability too. I think Kulik gets forgotten. He's got some game to him.
Yeah, because when I think about him, the first thing that comes to mind is just that he'll light one up on a one-timer.
Sure, but he can. His wrist shot's great too, and I don't mind his playmaking. And I'm sorry, that's a great unit.
Yeah, I think that it could be a very good unit. There's one role I still want, and it's kind of the thing Brian Fisher, we talked about with him a little bit earlier, that Kane did. We also had Jack Hahn on late in the year, and he was a former assistant coach in the league, video coach.
Right.
And he wrote a book about all the tactics that the teams use around the league. And the thing he said the Sabres really lacked on the power play was the Norris spot. And maybe Kulik could be the thing you're talking about.
Right.
What Norris failed to do from his spot that Jack Hahn talked about was you want, when you're opposite Tage, an elite passer across the ice that not just making the pass, you manipulate the penalty kill to open up a pass lane with how you move, with where your eyes are, and then get it over to him. And Norris just wasn't capable of doing that. And that just because Kane's not here doesn't mean I can't get that guy. I wonder, without that, how they could be a really great unit. I think they could be good without it. I think they were good at the end of the year without it.
Yeah.
In the Montreal series, they actually found their way to a pretty good solution when they were in the zone for 3 years. Since the year they were third in the league in goals, and that year they had a good power play, right? Olsson was involved there, and Skinner and Mittelstadt, and Granata was the coach. Since that year, they had a top power play that season. They've been searching for it. And I feel like they've always just, we got to get it to Tage, get it to Tage, get it to Tage. And when they were succeeding on the man advantage in the Montreal series, that was not their plan of attack. They would get it to Tage, and then they get down to Doan.
Yep.
And now we're working a man advantage low. Benson's in front of the net, right? Norris is probably on the other side, and Doan has got the puck. Doan can score from the short side. He had done that. Benson had scored from the slot, and we're gonna work the puck there instead of just trying to get Tage to blast off.
Yes,
and they scored multiple times.
Right,
Benson. I think the one power play goal he had on his backhand in the Montreal series was a game winner. Right? Wasn't that a third period game winner? Right.
And that's that shift we were talking about the other day for our Buffalo Sports ESPYs, I think.
Yeah.
But I agree. I think a part of that I could see with why Norris may have struggled there last season was, you remember how frustrated we got at a certain point with him not shooting?
Yeah. Yeah.
You think penalty killers didn't know that and didn't know, listen, this guy's never going to rip the puck at the net. Mm-hmm. Just flank him and don't let him transport the puck anywhere.
Right.
And that's going to kill their whole unit. And I think that was a big problem last year for them, is pucks would get on his stick and penalty killers would know I can cut him off and he's not going to be able to do anything with it because he's not going to take the one-timer. And if he's going to catch and shoot it with a wrist shot, then my goalie's got to make that stop, and that's one he will take 10 times out of 10. Mm-hmm. And so that makes it it's like a half power play. It's like I've got 4.5 guys out here against 4 because this guy is not really a threat. And so Kulik is absolutely a threat. And I don't think he's the playmaker Norris is, but I think he's young enough and could, if you coach him and get him to a place, he could be 70% of that, and with the shot, it would be just as effective.
Right.
And to me, that is a way to very quickly and easily open up some space. There's also just conceptual ideas they can try with, you ever watch Carolina's power play and what they do below the goal line?
Yeah.
They pass it back and forth down there.
Yeah.
And it forces the penalty killers to, one, sag lower into the zone, which would in turn open up Thompson for, if they can get a low to high pass, get it over to him. That's a very nice one-timer look. Mm-hmm. And it forces you into a collapsed penalty-killing unit, and you can pass around the outside much easier. And if they decide to not do that, you can attack the net. And with the guys they've got, they can do that. In Doan and Benson, to me, you're in a very good position with that. So conceptually, like schematically, there is things to look at and try and rectify with that unit as well.
Yeah. I'm watching back that power play goal that Benson won game four on. By the way, they scored two power play goals in that game to make it 2-2 and then 3-2, although the first power play goal was Tage scoring from center ice. Right. It went off the boards, so it doesn't really count. The second one, like, the whole plan is to get it to Doan. The top of the power play, you know how normally like teams picture a power play in your mind. It's an umbrella.
Yeah.
You have the two flanks. The Sabres are not positioned like that at all. Thompson's got the puck high. Dahlin is at the other point. It's like they're the two defensemen.
Mm-hmm.
Doan's down low. Benson's in front of the net. Quinn's at the back door.
Right.
So I've got two Montreal forwards meeting Tage and Dahlin, and I've got a 3-on-2 low, and that's how Doan gets the puck. And now Matheson is deciding, well, Quinn's being covered, so it's like a mini 2-on-1. It's Benson and Doan against Matheson, and right. They score.
And that is what a power play is creating and finding 2-on-1s right. Wherever you can, beat that guy, and then get to the net. That's strategically what you want to try to do on the power play. And so putting yourself in that position, which is, I'm pretty sure I remember this as well, was a box and one.
Yeah.
So they play with four. And they can pass around the perimeter. If the middle guy's ever open, that's your primo shot. And then you wait for something else to open up and have movement on the backside. And those two-on-ones make themselves more apparent than they do on an umbrella or a 1-3-1 format. Because those are more one-timer focused. The box and one, to me, is often we're trying to look and pass around, open up a seam, and find a quick hitter play.
Yeah. The other thing very quickly on this, we'll take a break. We've got to do Extendo Sports. I remember another thing Jack Hahn told us about their power play. They just simply need to play Benson more.
Yes.
Benson, and I'm looking at the numbers right now, like their number one unit when Benson was on the ice versus when he wasn't, their number one unit was so much better when Benson is out there.
Having a retrieval dog like that is everything to a power play.
And like, the way I'm measuring like who played on the number one unit, just who played with Tage, because Tage was always out there.
Yeah.
And Benson only played 74 of the 250 minutes with Tage.
Yeah, give me more of that.
Yeah, I need if Tage plays 250 power play minutes again next year,
200.
Benson needs to go from 74 to 200.
Yeah.
He needs to be on there all the time.
100%.
We'll come back. We'll wrap things up. Get it off to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show coming up on WGR.
Afford that anyway. So, all right, cool. Matter of fact, I'm thrilled about the signing because I didn't want him in Buffalo anyway.
I will say real quick on this because I do want to get to a football topic we've got today. I put it up to Twitter as well, and so we'll get to that here in a little bit. But there was a call the other day for Shubin the Bulldog, mainly talking about Connor Hellebuck, but I think Patrick Kane could have fit this as well. And that is, and just follow me with this for a moment, sort of the owner getting involved in those kind of signings or trades, being that, guys, these players are super marketable. We can sell a ton of jerseys. We're going to put butts in seats. There is that level of excitement. Kane is not Hellebuck. I'm not saying that. But in terms of jersey sales, there will probably be a lot of Sabres fans that would want to have local boy, future Hall of Famer Patrick Kane, and have a Sabres jersey of him, even if it only lasts a year. So that marketability alone, is it worth $8 million for 2 years? Or $8 million per for the next 2 years? No. But I wondered about that, and I do really wonder about it with Connor Hellebuck. There hasn't been really any reports lately. We're all sort of waiting for like anything else to move on that front, and it may not, but Derek, you've made the point too that we could be waiting until training camp, so there maybe is still reason to somewhat hope. But I have thought about that a lot in terms of the marketability of getting a Connor Hellebuck on your team and what that would mean both on the ice, of course, but also off the ice. Do all of a sudden teams just start talking, or, you know, not teams, excuse me, the league and the insiders start talking about you more? Or do you become a main fixture? Because, well, you have the hero of the Olympics, one of the best goalies of his generation, arguably still the best goalie in the NHL. Kane is not the same level of that.
No.
But I could see maybe the Sabres going, look, if we can get him on a cheap deal, he maybe could make up for it immediately just in jersey sales.
I'm kind of wondering what's up with, like, how bad of a general manager is Kyle Davidson?
He's got a lot of cap to spend, and it doesn't seem like a huge plan.
Because, Zach, the last three contracts that Patrick Kane has signed were one-year deals with Detroit. Mm-hmm. That's why we've had to talk about Pat Kane
every year,
possibly to Buffalo, and I keep pushing back on the idea. Zach, do you want to guess the cap hits of his last three contracts with the Detroit Red Wings?
Ooh. I mean, it's not the $8 million a year.
No.
2.5.
2.75 was the first one in 2023.
Okay.
And 2024, it's $4 million. And last year, it's $3
million.
All right, Kyle Davidson. You are a general manager in the National Hockey League, and I am not. I don't know what that means, but those are the facts.
Yeah.
It's not like they have to spend to the cap floor.
No.
They now have less cap space than the Sabres.
It is something. Look, was he bad the last 2 years in Detroit? No. 59 points and then 57 points. He's still very good on the power play. He's never really been a strong defensive forward. That's not his game. They need somebody on the wing with Connor Bedard. I do understand that. But I do look at the $8 million per year, and I just think the Sabres were never really involved in this.
But also,
they never really were involved in this.
But also, Kane
or
has,
if they were, it was, I think Joe was talking about it, a very incentive-laden contract to try to entice Kane.
But even then, he has 59 points the year prior. He gets a $3 million deal with Detroit.
Right.
Like, yeah. Okay, Kyle Davidson, you are a general manager in the National Hockey League, and I am not.
I am.
Okay.
I am okay that he's not a Sabre. I was never really about it. And again, it sort of would take, hey, Jason Zucker's no longer on this roster. Jack Quinn's no longer on this roster. You kind of need actually someone to fill in a roster spot because we brought in Hellebuck and we've traded these guys away. Like, you need somebody for it. But when I see none of the forwards have left, and also then when I see the ultimate final contract, it just, you do sit there and go, no. And then with Kyle Davidson, it also becomes, he's had an interesting offseason, right? The Bo Byram trade alone has, in many eyes, kind of sealed his fate in Chicago, where it doesn't matter what he does this year. He needs to go. You know, Bo Byram has never proven to be a number one defenseman, and yet you're trading the world for him and then paying quite a bit of money to keep him. And he's never once in his career proven to be that number one defenseman.
Did you hear the clip from Darren Ferris last night?
I did not. I saw people talking about it.
He was on the Puckpedia podcast.
It was mainly Mitch Marner, right?
It was mainly Mitch Marner. But he does talk about the process with Byram this offseason.
Oh, boy.
And he said that the opportunity was never going to be there in Buffalo, but when they talked to one of the teams that were on the market for trading for him, a team was going to offer 14 per. I'm going to guess it was the Sharks, who then looked at Chicago throwing up the fourth overall pick and said, I'm good.
Well, we had talked about that at the time, that the Sharks we knew were rumbling around. The Sharks are much closer to being complete with their rebuild. The offensive talent they have is obnoxious, and really they kind of just need a defenseman. Like, Byram there would make a ton of sense of just, I don't even need you to be an elite number one defenseman. Just don't be bad. The forward talent might be able to carry you for the day sort of deal, and you can kind of build around the pieces as you go in the next couple of years. But yeah, like we talked about at the time, Chicago offers up the fourth overall pick. Buffalo probably calls Greer back and goes, are you willing to offer two? No? Cool.
And
that's it.
Yeah, it's kind of funny, like, the other thing that Ferris said that was interesting to me was he mentions how, you know, he sets up the bridge deal while negotiating with Adams. So that he can get to this moment ultimately anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, take that for what you will. It was an interesting clip, and it kind of confirmed everything I thought about the whole thing, which was the agent, you know, made his play to set up for what was ultimately going to happen. He's good at his job. He is dang good at his job.
The weird thing is he doesn't actually get him to the open market. He just signs the contract when he gets to the new
right.
team.
Yeah, I mean, he gets him an open market level contract.
Yeah, it's a big money move. It just, you almost kind of thought, especially how it started, that maybe they will just drag this out for a year and get him to the open market. And then maybe still signs with Chicago. Or they wait a little while, make people sweat and do it instead. I mean, it is done before the McCarr deal or before Hughes. I mean, there was worries there that they were going to wait for those contracts to come in before they get done. But they do. Yeah, Chicago's having an offseason. I mean, they certainly are. They do get Bedard done, right? So there's no fears there. He's $15 million a year, I believe that's what I saw.
That is correct.
So, I mean, they're getting it done. Kane not going to wind up as a Buffalo Sabre. This is almost definitely the end of his career. 2 years, he'll be 40 around when this contract ends. So that's it. I'm also sort of cool with it too, because you mentioned he's been signing 1 year deals with Detroit. I never really wanted Kane all that much. I also super didn't want to be the second choice.
Yeah.
And like, I was kind of done after year one, really, of signing another year with Detroit. I'm like, okay, whatever, moving on. But because it's the 1 year deals, we keep coming back here and I'm good. No one in life ever wants to be the second choice where someone else says no and you go back.
Right.
No one ever wants to be that. And it kind of kept coming to the Sabres of, is it going to be Sabres or Detroit? Oh, it's Detroit. Sabres or Detroit? Oh, it's Detroit again. Sabres or Chicago?
The same sentiment's Chicago. Always there. Oh, just bring them home. It
would be storybook. There's no doubt about that.
I'll tell you this. Ready? If he wanted to be here,
mm-hmm.
It would have been done already.
Probably would have been done already when he left Chicago. But it wasn't. So, here we are.
Oh, well.
Patrick
Kane
on to the Blackhawks yet again, probably to wrap up his career. 2 years, $8 million per season. 803-0550, the number to call. Now, to the topic of the day that I do want to dive in a little bit. I heard Tim and Brad talking a lot about this. I know the Morning Guys have talked about him as well. Keon Coleman. And you mentioned him yesterday. We were talking about breakout candidates.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd mentioned sort of right at the end of the conversation, what would it take for you, me, to consider it a breakout year for Coleman?
Less and chocolate chip cookies. Sorry,
probably,
I'll back up.
Probably. Also,
hey Joe.
don't get like suspended for a game. Don't get benched for a game because you're missing practice. Like there's little things there where I'm like, just I don't want to worry about you. Like is probably a safe bet. But there is also a question now about Coleman of, no, but really, what is a good season for him? I said 800 yards. I think I said 6 to 8 touchdowns around there because he is a good red zone weapon for them. That's kind of the only thing he's been consistently good at is he can score when they go to him. But it is something now with Coleman of just the expectations it feels like for him amongst the fans, maybe even amongst the Bills themselves, are just so low. And Tim Graham brought up a good point yesterday that I know people get frustrated by it. I got frustrated by it, of Bean and Brady kind of constantly, whenever they were talking with the media, would go out of their way to praise Coleman. They're asked about it. Don't get me wrong. It's not that they're bringing up him just out of a hat, but they would go out of their way to have long answers praising him. He's having such a great offseason. We've got Bill's coaches talking about it. He's so smart, especially for his position. I've never seen this before. Just out of their way to do this. But it feels like amongst the fans, I think especially, he is just a non-factor in terms of any sort of hope or even sort of good feelings about him at all. It's justified. Through 2 years, his best year is his rookie year in terms of yardage. He has 29 receptions off 57 targets, 556 yards, and 4 touchdowns. We do leave that season with me talking about, and I think many of us talking about, there were glimpses. It's not perfect. He's probably never going to be a 1,400-yard guy, 1,500-yard guy, but there's signs. The Seattle game, I think especially, is the one. Yes. I look at in his rookie year where he was sort of doing everything. He's drawing penalties. He's blocking like the sixth offensive lineman. He's making big catches. He comes up with a touchdown. It even happens in the way you drafted him. Perfect. We start season two. He's having a good training camp. It's not that bad. Like he's making plays. They're going to him a lot. His opening game against the Ravens. A lot of it is also busted coverage, but he has 11 targets, 8 catches, 112 yards, and a touchdown. The touchdown being also a tip play where he has to go up and get it, and if they don't, they're going to lose that game. After that, Derek, he never gets close to that target number, never gets close to it. In reality, his targets are closer to the receptions he has in that season, or in that game. He has 8 there. His best target games are 7 in week 5 against New England, and then 8 against Miami in week 10.
And Miami is also one where it seems like there's a little bit of promise. He draws that penalty on the hit from Poyer that ultimately ruins the rest of his season.
That's his rookie year. I'm talking last year.
Oh, sorry. But there's always been the potential with him. The last pass that he caught was a touchdown in a playoff game.
That's right, it was. Yeah.
And he muscles his way through the Denver secondary to make it into the end zone on the quick slant. The week prior, he has a critical catch that flips the field against Jacksonville. Again, it's not like it's not there. Everything makes sense for him to break out. I guess it is just put it together consistently. If consistency is your issue, I mean, that is something that young players just do eventually figure out sometimes. Sometimes they don't, and then they're out of the league. But the hope for it really just is, all right, can you just dial in? Be a little bit more consistent with this. Because on the field, I don't think the effort is in question.
He's a very good blocker.
That's
usually effort-based.
Does his assignments. Will he screw up? Yes, he's still a young player. He's a young person. It's weird talking about Coleman in this sense because everything good and bad you see out of him. The fact that, you know, he has all these physical traits and yet sometimes he still has a difficult time with the 50-50 balls. A skill set that he was lauded for in college. So he doesn't know how to fight with his body on a consistent basis. He doesn't have the separation skills. But separation in route running can be taught via technique. He is seen as a big slot guy, and yet the Bills decide, no, we're throwing him right to the outside. He has promising camps and even promising games. Of course, Baltimore in week one, but that said more about the Ravens than anything else. I can't wait to see if Coleman can deliver this season. Mostly because this will be the last year that we really talk about it.
Oh, I would say almost definitely. Either he breaks out this year or he's done. And I was mentioning Tim and Brad's conversation, but Tim made a good point on that too of, we maybe know how the Bills actually feel about him. I mentioned that we hear Brady and Bean talk a lot about it, but how does the offseason start for him? It's the owner that throws him under the bus. The owner, of course, Terry Pegula, will have his own opinions. He also probably is being fed how at least management feels about the player.
It's probably formed in a way by the people he's around.
It's probably formed in a way by people who he is sitting and watching the games with. And so I do look at Coleman, and we're talking about breakout season. I'll also say this. It has to start early. It can't be, week 9 or 10, he figures it out. It probably has to be Houston, Detroit. Okay, Coleman's a factor. He's on the offense. We're not talking about in camp, Skylar Bell's going to start taking away snaps from him. Josh Palmer is just fully taking away snaps from him. The two outside guys are DJ Moore, Josh Palmer, and there's no discussion.
If we have to have a discussion about him playing special teams just to get snaps and justifying his roster spot, we have a problem.
Mm-hmm. We have a problem. And, that's the thing, too. I threw it up to Twitter, and we'll get to some responses. We'll also get to your calls here in just a moment, 803-0550. Stats are one thing. But I think for many people, it is literally, I just don't want to have to think about you. And we might be in a positive spot. I don't want to have to go into a game and we're finding out at 10, 11 in the morning, hey, yeah, guys, Keon's going to be suspended for the first half because he was late to practice again. Yeah, I think that's where many people sit.
That's something that we absolutely cannot see again this year.
And where
performance is one thing.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a middling player, fine. Can't have that.
And where I agree with you, he's a young person, he's a young player, absolutely.
Yeah, consistency issues will always be there for young players.
Right. But in terms of the maturity, he is not somebody that came up out of nowhere where he was at a max school and had to grind it out or was at D2 and was never, quote unquote, given anything. And he doesn't necessarily fully get the spotlight yet. He was a Division I basketball and football prospect. He winds up at Michigan State first. He goes to Florida State. Big-time programs in primetime windows. Media days galore. And he's a near first-round pick. He has had the spotlight on him more often than not in his adult life. There is a different than standard for you when that is the case. Because you actually should be used to it. You grew up in the spotlight. For some, that is a bad thing. Look at most child actors. Sometimes, really bad. Other times, for naturally mature people, it actually is a good thing.
But maybe,
they all of a sudden are very PR trained, and they know what to do. They know what to say. They know what not to say.
But maybe that's also what it is. Is that maybe it's bad for a person like Coleman, and it doesn't help him. Being around the spotlight and the media mm-hmm. all the time. Like, I'm not trying to make an excuse, but I am trying to...
We're trying to rationalize it.
Yeah, I'm trying to rationalize. And again, he's drafted age 20 to 21. That's...
He's a young man.
Yep. You're a young man coming into the NFL. Even on their standards. Like, I get it, but I don't get it. You know, it's the weird thing.
803-0550, the number to call. Let's get connected to our fans. Brought to you by Northtown Kia, West New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop online at northtownkia.com. We'll start this morning off with Derek on the line. Derek, how we doing?
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you guys doing?
Doing well.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm really high on Keon Coleman myself. I'm hoping all this shenanigans not showing up for practice, being late for meetings. I'm hoping all them shenanigans are behind him, because I don't know if him and Sean McDermott just didn't see eye to eye or something, or, you know, if he was just disrespecting him, but I don't know. I mean, like you said, this is it for his career. I think so too. This is it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't necessarily say this is it, Derek, but it probably is for his Bills career.
I think it could be for his career.
I think it's one way to say it in both terms. Like, this is it for his Bills career. If he doesn't make it this year, the team releases him. That's a 24-year-old wide receiver next year.
Who hasn't done anything in the NFL and has disciplinary issues. The NFL is willing to forgive a lot.
The NFL is willing to forgive a lot.
If you're talented. If you're not talented and you're not showing up to practice.
The thing is, that will there be enough of the consistency there that, you know, we don't even have to have this discussion? But if the Bills do ultimately move on from him, all it takes is one general manager to be like, I can fix him.
Oh, sure, sure.
And I think that, especially with the expansion of practice squads these days, his NFL career is not over, unless he chooses for it to be. At 24, there's no way.
At 24,
yeah.
I think more where I'm at with in terms of his career being over. I mean, if we're talking about a
his second round starter would probably be over.
Second round pick, 3 years in, and all of a sudden we're talking practice squad. That's not good.
Yeah, no, that's not good.
Now all of a sudden it's sure you're still technically here, but like
yeah. If we're talking year four and the expanded practice squads, yeah, but that would also mean, you know, your career's not over. His Bills career and his career probably with quality looks would be already. So it is right in a point. But I would also think, like, you know, he'd probably latch onto a roster somewhere.
He could.
But here's hoping we don't have that conversation.
Derek also brings up, not you, Derek, the caller Derek.
Yes, caller Derek brings up.
Brings up shenanigans. It's also technically in his first offseason, too. Not to this extent. But in his first offseason, it was talking about how he didn't handle his injury well. And the recovery process of that. He went on podcasts in the offseason and mentioned that. He says all the right things.
Kind of lamenting how he handled it.
And that was one of the reasons why I was high on Keon going into his sophomore season was, okay, he seems to have really taken accountability. He's very well spoken about it. He's not trying to be a jokester. He's just, I didn't handle it well. It's my first time being hurt. It didn't help him that now two off seasons in a row, we're talking about something of like, dude, come on. And one of these is just show up to practice on time. And for many, and I know Eric Wood has really kind of banged home this topic as well on it, especially in the NFL, showing up to practice on time, you should already be at the facility doing workouts, doing recovery, doing other things. Like, it is hard to be late in the NFL because you should already be there.
You should already be in the building in order for that to happen.
You know, we're all talking about like clocking in like we do for work, where like, oh, my shift starts at 8, I get here like 7:50, 7:45, right? If you know, I beat traffic. Them, it's practice at 8:45. You need to be here at 7:30 for treatment.
Yeah.
To then have practice at 8:45. You know, it's stuff like that. And I think that's where, like, for me, it does bother me. It's a little thing, but it bothers me because it takes almost an effort to be late in the NFL. It does.
I don't know about it takes an effort. It takes a decision.
It takes a decision.
It takes a decision to be late in the National Football League.
Back to the phones. Doug up next. Doug, how we doing?
I'm doing well. How's about you guys?
Doing very well.
Good. You know, I'm kind of looking at this as Coleman's Sammy Watkins here. Third year, Sammy Watkins. He's not performing. Thurman Thomas walks up to him and he goes, "You know, you don't get it straight, and they are going to cut you." I think that's what he needs. He needs a veteran player to walk straight up to him and tell him straight to his face, "They're going to get rid of you. You don't get your act straightened out, dude." And that's what it's really going to take with them. I see Coleman. I've seen great games out of him. Well, not great games, but some really good games out of him. And, mm-hmm. you know, as far as separation was concerned, that wasn't what we were looking for. We were looking for that guy who could go up high and get that ball. But, you know, whatever he turns into, you know. But he just doesn't seem to have it between the ears, and that's where I think he's missing it.
And that is the concern, Doug. I think that's right, is that for many people, I can almost excuse talent. I think many people will get very frustrated, and you can hear it in my voice. I get frustrated with it, where you need to have it between the ears. Sammy Watkins, by the way, Bill's career ends after his third year. He is off to the Rams in his fourth year, and in his third year, it's a disaster for him. His first 2 years are actually really good. 128 targets his rookie season, 65 catches, 982 yards, 6 touchdowns. Only plays 13 games in 2015, his second year, but 60 catches, over 1,000 yards, 9 touchdowns. And then he only plays 8 games, and he has 430 yards, and only has 2 touchdowns, and then he's off to the Rams. And really, Watkins' career, the remainder of it, and he dealt with injuries as well, but the rest of his career is kind of hanging around that 500 to like 700 yard range, and that's where he is the rest of his career.
Which is unfortunate, mm-hmm. A, considering what the Bills paid to get up there for, but B, you know, the fact that he dealt with injuries the entire time. That's where, you know, like teams will be willing to be like, okay, so he's talented, he's just hurt, but we could take a chance. As the caller alludes to there, it is between the ears. You need to fix it. And I think Coleman is self-aware enough to know that that can't happen for another year, or there's the risk that his career could be over as a whole.
Right. Watkins is a top five pick.
While I think that, you know, the expansion of practice squad rosters will make sure that it's, you know, elongated. If this year ends up more like last year, he's not going to have much of a career. And I think that's the part that either gets through his head via someone else or via himself. This is probably a crossroads year for him. You have to prove that you're at least good enough to hang around on the NFL roster.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing. Watkins builds out a career in part because to start his career, it's not 2,000-yard seasons, but he has 2,000 yards in 2 years in Buffalo. It, again, devolves in his third year. But there was enough talent there, again, top five pick, to warrant, we'll throw him a bone. Coleman hasn't proven that yet at all. Like, to the caller's point, I've seen good games. I brought up the Seattle game. You can bring up Baltimore if you want. There's been good games, but not enough maybe to warrant we're going to take on the headache where we have to worry about him getting to practice on time. If he gets hurt, we're going to have to worry, is he going to handle his recovery process right? Because that's what the Bills have had to deal with for the last two seasons. 803-0550, the number to call. We'll also get your tweets as well. But what does a breakout season look like for Keon Coleman? And do you even think he will break out this year? Or is it time to put the sails up and move on from the once second-round pick of the Buffalo Bills? Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, this is WGR.
From Seneca Buffalo Creek Casino, Mike Schoep and the Bulldog. We're in the sports book today, and lots of afternoon baseball. I think maybe all the baseball today is afternoon baseball. if you enter the facility and your first thought is, where are the side-by-side E.J. Manuel and Ryan Fitzpatrick autographed framed jerseys? Right by us.
Oh, yeah. We're sitting right in front. Wow, look at that.
Pick your partner.
All right.
Fitzpatrick and Manuel, side-by-side. Who was better?
Pick your fighter.
Pick your fighter. Choose your fighter. Right behind us here, we've got the Survivor contest promotion today, as we just talked about with Tony Sinise from here at the casino, and names will be drawn, and everybody will have a great time. Now, from Survivor Football, right to Cosmic Hockey.
Cosmic Hockey?
Cosmic
What's that,
hockey.
Mike?
This is something, like, I can explain a Survivor pool as long, you know, as the day is long or whatever the phrase
we
is.
Had to bring
I don't know what I can say about Cosmic Hockey.
Fortunate for all of us, we have a professional on the Wester Hotline. John Simperman is joining us on the Wester Hotline, an old friend of the show and a familiar name in sports in Buffalo and really across the country. And he's behind this effort and supporting this effort and is here to tell us all about it. John, good afternoon. How are you, man?
Hey, boys. How are you?
Great.
We are comfortable and watching all the ball
games.
And
we're trying to figure out who the right pick is for week one, even though it's like 7 weeks away. John,
hey, I was checking. How are my Guardians doing? It was in the eighth inning last I checked.
What? 1-1, bottom of the ninth. Two outs, no one on.
Okay.
Asked and answered. So good luck
Thank
to them.
You.
John, just
Thank
to start
you.
To start this off, what is Cosmic Hockey?
You know something? First of all, Mike, thanks for having me on. I know we go way back. I've been working on this idea for probably 2.5 years. And maybe you can, or the listeners can help answer this. You know, basketball has had for 100 years the Globetrotters. Baseball is putting 100,000 people in football stadiums for banana ball. And if any of our Buffalonian friends were at Salem Field for July 3rd, July 4th, Cosmic Baseball put 32,000 fans into the ballpark over 2 days. So my question has always been, in my opinion, the coolest, the fastest sport out there, hockey. Why haven't we had an entertainment-focused barnstorming property? So that's what we're going to do. That's what Cosmic Hockey is going to be.
And what kind of timeline are we working on here? I know there's a training camp coming up in Lake Placid that I'm sure you can fill us in on, but how soon will these events be, and where will, you know, what's the plan? What's the initial groundbreaking, so to speak?
Yeah, so, you know, first of all, Cosmic Hockey, we're going to play a two halves. First half, open the game up, 4-on-4. Let's modify the rules. Let's let the players, men and women, show up their creativity. Lights go off in the second half, and this is where the Cosmic side comes in. We're playing under black light, glow-in-the-dark equipment, pucks, uniforms. It's, if you've seen what they're doing in baseball, it's absolutely mesmerizing. So to answer your question, we have over 200 applicants for tryouts. We are hosting tryouts for Cosmic Hockey on Saturday, August 1st in Boston at the Bruins Training Center. And then we're moving the circus to here in Buffalo on the 8th of August to host tryouts in Buffalo at the Harbor Center. We, as I said, we have over 200 applicants. We're carving that down to about 60, all of which have professional experience from, you know, whether they played in the mall to all the way up to, quite frankly, played in the NHL is who is going to be trying out for the two teams that we're putting on the ice starting in 2027.
Before we run out of time and not mention this, is there still room for people to apply, John? Like, is there still a website or anything where people that might think they're qualified for it?
Yeah, you know, go to cosmichockey.com. I'd really encourage you to do it by 5 o'clock today because we're really trying to, you know, we need to let players know who's made the cut for tryouts and who has not. You know, I would strongly recommend that if your skill level is at my level, which is beer leaguer, no need apply.
Yeah, I think you are assuming this. You're going to probably see some really good players. Like, I know from Savannah Bananas, there's a White Sox player, Tristan Peters, who played. I don't know if he applied or what his story was, but he was a member. He was on the field for Savannah Bananas, and now he's in the Major League All-Star game. He just hit for the cycle 2 weeks ago for the White Sox. No, like, there's talent.
You're right. Yeah. So we've seen players that, you know, want to continue to play professionally. They also want to entertain. And, you know, something, they might be tired of driving the bus, you know, from Utica to Binghamton, right? So this is a way to extend their career. It's also a way for them to build their own brand, their own name, image, and likeness. You know, I, like you guys, I've been around hockey players professionally all my life. And they're some of the funniest outgoing guys. But once you put a microphone in front of them, you know, all of a sudden they clam up.
So, you're so right.
You know, so we are going to encourage the celebration dance. We're going to encourage interacting with the crowd. We're going to encourage pregame, postgame, autograph sessions. We're really looking at a family-focused, affordable entertainment option that, in some cases, it might be a 10-year-old's first hockey game. And, you know, if they walk out of that building and they say, you know, Mom, Dad, that was kind of fun. Why don't you buy me some skates, right? So that's also part of this, you know, bigger picture vision for this, is to get the coolest game on earth in front of more people.
Can you divulge if there is, like, what's the most familiar name you've come across in the player application process? Or don't you want to say?
Mario Lemieux.
You know,
too early to say.
No, he has applied. He's actually living in Buffalo now. He played over 12 years in the KHL. He's played a couple years for the LA Kings. You guys can connect some dots after that. But
sure.
What I also have, and I think our local listeners will get a kick out of this, is I've engaged Maury Gehr, who I say is the younger, better-looking Gehr brother, to head up our player recruitment. So Maury, who has been an NHL scout for a long, long time, is actively out there reviewing the player applications, soliciting additional players. So, you know, I brought in some pros, if you will, even to help with the talent process.
I saw on the press release that I read a reference to the arena in Lake Placid for this.
Yeah.
And Bulldog and I have both been there and walked around and just can, of course, appreciate the historic aspect of that. And
the whole town is magic, but the arena itself is maybe the epicenter of the magic.
So you'll be up there.
Yeah, so I really push for that because I'm working with a great group at Cosmic Baseball, and they brought me on board because they say we are great baseball guys. We don't know hockey, at least to the degree you do, John. So I said, you know, if we're going to do this right, I want to go to the most famous rink in North America to kick this off. And been working with the folks, the ORTA team, the Olympic development group in Lake Placid, who are going to be unbelievable partners. We're going to do a 2-week training camp up there in October. And training camp also means kind of like a stage rehearsal, right? Then I think I can announce this here. We're going to play our first game on Friday, December 8th in Herb Brooks Arena in front of 4,500, you know, hockey
right.
players who are up there that weekend. So I just think that is the most authentic way to kick this off. And I know the players I'm talking to or we're talking to are like, oh, you guys are serious. You're doing this in Lake Placid. So, yeah. And, you know, most of our hockey talent is going to be from the Buffalo and the Boston region, and there's a lot of talent. So I think it's also convenient for them, you know, to, you know, just it's a great place for them to spend a couple of weeks as well.
John, you mentioned, like, I don't know what phrasing you use there, like this training camp and rehearsals. Like, how much testing have you done on exactly what? Because it's got to be a pretty arduous task to get the black lighting in an arena and make that all work. But, like, where are you on figuring out what's going to work and what's not going to work?
Yeah, great question, Bulldog. So, first of all, Cosmic Baseball started hardest sports to light, that being a baseball park. They are literally on top of the rafters, and they are installing black lights that shoot down on the field. No two ballparks are the same size, right? So the fact that they have successfully, to a T, executed 31 across the U.S. this season gives us full confidence that lighting up a 200 by 85 sheet that already does lighting for Disney on Ice and concerts is going to be much easier. So that said, we feel real good about the infrastructure. And by the way, we're going to have 2 weeks in Lake Placid to figure it out. But I'm also working with Jet Ice. Jet Ice is the company that does all the in-ice markings, blue lines, red lines, gold creases. They're running some tests up in Brantford, Ontario, testing out reactive, reflective face-off circles and, you know, we're not going to have blue lines, but probably have a red line, you know, things of that sort. So, you know, feeling really good about it, especially since they have and are in the middle of executing 31 U.S. ballparks right now.
Cosmic Hockey, it's coming. John Simperman with us behind the project. Thanks for your time today, John. Good luck.
All right, guys. Hey, have fun down there and stay away from the tables, all right?
Yeah.
Hey, and good luck with your events this weekend. I know you've got music at the Knox Farm on Friday with my friends Leroy Towns, and then Saturday, Kirsten and I made it out to the Hilltop thing last year, but we're not going to make it this year. But that's a super cool event. Ski lift up to, if it's Bruce Lake, to watch live music. It's a great, great day.
Yeah, weather should be great both days. You know, yeah, see you at Knox Farm or see you at Holiday Valley on Saturday. That would be great.
All right, John. Best to your wife and Jake and everybody else.
Thanks, John.
All right, we'll see you. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you, boys. Thank you.
Cosmic, you're welcome. Cosmic Hockey. I guess Patrick Kane is out.
Yeah, I think he's. Although I don't know when they're playing these games. I mean, maybe, but yeah, no, probably not.
$8 million a year.
I cannot believe that contract.
I know.
I cannot believe that contract.
I mean, there are teams in sports that you're just so thankful for.
Right.
And as somebody that never wanted Patrick Kane anywhere near the Sabres, I'm especially thankful today for the Chicago Blackhawks. When you say your prayers tonight, thank you, Chicago.
I really thought this was one of these deals where everybody had, like, was reading it wrong or it got whatever. Like, I thought it was a 2-year, $8 million deal for a year.
Even that. Isn't great for the team.
That's around where he's been the last couple of years. Like,
double it.
2 years, $16 million. Like, what are you doing?
I don't know. That's wild.
That is nuts, I think.
Sal Capaccio coming up at 4. We're at Seneca Buffalo Creek Casino today. Waist deep in survivor pool strategy. I'm going to go buy mine during the break.
Okay.
Sal coming up. Thanks for listening. That was John Simperman. CosmicHockey.com. We already talked to Tony Sinise from here at Buffalo Creek with more details on the Survivor Contest. We'll be in and out of that over the course of the day. Several people just right, like almost within arm's length, are signing up for the drawing for some Bills tickets, and we'll give you the details on that as we continue. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, thanks for being with us. Once again, this is WGR.